In 2008, pop star Britney Spears was placed under a conservatorship. Ever since, her assets and career have been kept under the control of her father, Jamie Spears, as well as an attorney. Britney Spears has been in this arrangement for more than 13 years now, even as she's toured, released albums, earned tens of millions of dollars, and worked as a judge on The X Factor. In recent years, a movement called Free Britney has pushed for that conservatorship to be lifted, and Spears herself recently gave a speech in court asking for autonomy over her own life. Today, a court hearing will help determine where she stands. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we're breaking down everything you need to know about Britney Spears' conservatorship. Joining us today are Andrew Limbong and Anastasia Tsiolkas. They are reporters for NPR's Culture Desk. Welcome back to you both.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
Thanks so much to both of you for being here. Anastasia, I'm going to start with you. Walk us through why Britney Spears was put under a conservatorship in the first place.
So it's a long history, Stephen, right? In February of 2008, Britney's dad, Jamie Spears, petitioned to have her placed in a temporary conservatorship after she had, as you may remember, some very public mental health struggles. And in October of that same year, the judge who was overseeing that case back then made the situation permanent. So Britney has been in a conservatorship for 13 years now. And up until last month, she never expressed publicly or in open court that she wanted out of the conservatorship altogether. But there have been some sealed court filings reported on by the New York Times in which Britney apparently told a court investigator back in 2016 that the conservatorship had too much control over her. And she also said in earlier court filings before she spoke herself in court that she doesn't want her father in charge of either her money or her person, as they say, her kind of all the elements of her personal life. And she and her father have had a really difficult history. And for much of the past 13 years, her father has held all the reins.
Okay. So, Andrew, what do we know? Anastasia said, you know, her father has held the reins. What do we know about her life under the conservatorship?
Yeah, in her testimony, she outlined a pretty bleak life. You know, she mentioned about being depressed and feeling like not having any agency over her own life. Some of the details that she went into were actually, you know, pretty rough to hear. She doesn't have any control over, like, her doctor, her mental health. She doesn't have any control over her medication. On the professional side of things, she doesn't have any control over, like, when she performed. There was that super successful Las Vegas residency, right? But it took a lot out of her, and they wanted to do it again, right? So, and they wanted part two, and she was just, like, burned out. And she said no, thinking that, like, I don't know if they're going to accept this no, but they said, okay, fine. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. And she felt relieved, but knew that another shoe was going to drop, right? And so she told this story about how, like, a couple days later, her doctor said, oh, I hear, you know, you haven't been playing ball, essentially, and then put her on lithium, which wasn't anything she'd ever taken before. And it really, you know, messed with her head. And so other sort of, like, rough details like that she revealed too, I think, listeners might have heard that she wants to have more children, but she has an IUD in place. And she says that under her conservatorship, she has to keep it in. All those things aside, even just on a day-to-day basis, she gets a $2,000 weekly allowance, you know? And she's the moneymaker here. She's the one providing all this money. And she's the one being, like, doled out what she can and can't spend. And, you know, even simple things, I think one of the things she kept coming back to in her testimony is that she just wants to, like, drive around in her boyfriend's car, which she apparently can't do.
Yeah, there was a piece in The New Yorker by Ronan Farrow and Gia Tolentino that really breaks down some of the issues around money. And one thing they kind of keep coming back to is things like that allowance and leaves it to the reader to compare that allowance to how much money a lot of the people in her orbit are making off of her. And it really jumps out. So, Anastasia, what do we know about how Britney Spears feels about conservatorship now?
Well, we've all heard now that she wants out of the conservatorship altogether. And one of the things she said in court that might have been easy to gloss over if you weren't familiar with the details was she doesn't want any more medical evaluations to judge whether or not she's able to come out of the conservatorship, which usually is a requirement for these things. And it's also very clear that Britney feels that the lawyer who was appointed by the court to look after her, Sam Ingham, and look after her best interests, she feels pretty strongly that he hasn't been doing so. And she actually said in court that Ingham, according to her, never told her that she could ask to be released from this arrangement. He apparently says that isn't true, and now he's asked to resign from her case altogether. And his request is part of what the judge is going to hear today in court, which is like this whole ball of petitions and motions from various parties. And I think it's worth noting, too, that under the terms of the conservatorship, Britney Spears herself is paying for all the lawyers and all the fees on all sides.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, like so much is happening kind of faster and faster. But this has been going on for 13 years. Why has there been so much movement now?
Yeah. You know, like you said, and the court documents, you know, found by the New York Times that Anastasia referred to earlier say that, you know, she's been trying to bang this drum, at least within the sort of due process metrics, right, for a couple of years that she's told, like, investigators, like, hey, this thing isn't working, and hey, this thing has gotten too much control over my life, and to apparently deaf ears, you know. There was that big New York Times documentary that came out on Hulu that really drew a lot of attention to her case and the Free Britney movement. And then in April is when she really said, hey, I want to hurry up and have my say, right? And that is what triggered the testimony on June. Her lawyers pushed for that to happen. You know, they expedited that process, which was, as I understand, like that hearing was just supposed to be for like regular lawyer stuff, right? But then they said, hey, she's right. Finally going to speak out. And that's what's sort of been like pushing all this. And, you know, this being the first we've heard from her publicly, it's, you know, no reason why it wouldn't draw so much attention.
So we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we'll be talking about today's hearing as well as what is possibly next for Britney Spears. We will be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Kind of like Taylor Swift choosing a cardigan on a chilly day. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. Let's talk about today's hearing. Today is kind of the next hearing in the process of possibly lifting this conservatorship. What, Andrew, is today's hearing about?
So there's a couple things on the schedule today. First things first is if Bessemer Trust, which is a wealth management company, had originally signed on to be the co-conservator of her estate, right, which is her money, the money side of this stuff. And then after her testimony in June, they requested to tap out of the agreement altogether. And so the judge has to then clear that and say, yes, you can or can't leave. The other interesting thing that's happening today, Anastasia mentioned that Sam Ingham requested to resign if like another court-appointed lawyer can take his place. That's set to be decided on today. Also, her mother had asked if Britney can be allowed to hire a private lawyer instead, right? So we have a couple of like jockeying things going on about who is going to be representing Britney from here on out, which theoretically could then cause a chain reaction of expediting her to be get out of the conservatorship or like be stuck in it for another cycle or so.
Okay, so Andrew gave kind of a sense of what might happen today. Anastasia, what do you see as some of the possible outcomes?
Well, there are so many things going on now, and honestly, so many of the things filed are actually working at cross purposes with each other, right? Because, for example, Lynn Spears, Britney's mom, is asking for her to be able to pick her own lawyer, whereas the current conservator of Britney's person, which is the technical term, the person who's looking over her personal stuff, Jody Montgomery, is asking the court to appoint someone else entirely. So there's like people coming at this with different angles to slightly different ends. So I think that the first job for the judge is going to decide what the biggest priorities are legally and then going from there and sort of letting a lot of dominoes fall into place. With the departure of Sang Ingham, her own lawyer right now, she may not be in a position to file a petition to end the conservatorship altogether by herself right now, which of course is what a lot of fans are hoping to have happen. But a lot of the media reports we've been seeing from sources who are clearly close to Britney is that she has very limited access to even telephones and things like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, how would she be able to file court documents for herself would be a huge question. So I think, as Andrew said, it's really going to be a question of seeing who can do these things on her behalf, and then having the judge sort of let the, all these other things fall into place. The other thing I wanted to say is that Andrew actually reported this earlier this week. By California law, Brittany actually could be filing by herself, but it doesn't seem possible that that's going to happen right now. But at the very least, after 13 years, the wheels seem to be finally moving. And what clearly unstuck them was this public testimony of Brittany's. And the weird thing in retrospect is that none of us would have had access to her remarks had this not happened during COVID. The mm-hmm. fact that this became instantaneously worldwide talk and a worldwide debate is really because of the weird times in which we live.
So can you expound on what you mean by that? You just mean because these statements are being made over computers and remotely instead of...
So she spoke remotely to the court. And for better or worse, the audio of that testimony leaked and was posted immediately online. And lots of media organizations, including us, ran transcripts of that testimony. So it's something that wouldn't necessarily have been public was instantaneously public, and sort of all that anguish that she's had pent up for a long time was really visceral immediately.
So there's one kind of last larger question that I want to get out in this conversation, and it may seem a little amorphous, but I want to get to the bottom a little bit and have us each speak to, for lack of a better question, why do we care so much about this story? Why is this such a big story? It's not just that Britney Spears is a big pop star, that it kind of reaches beyond that. And I think for me, and you know, one thing that I want us to touch on here is I watched that Framing Britney Spears documentary that came out earlier this year that's on Hulu. Andrew alluded to it. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things that really jumped out of that film was watching the pop cultural discussions around Britney Spears at the time, watching talk show monologues about her, watching the way she was talked about in the culture in some kind of truly horrifying ways. You know, I was writing about pop music. I can't pretend that I was innocent of it either. I think there seems to be a lot of reassessment as a culture of how she was treated and how we as consumers, as writers, as fans, as commentators, was I complicit in the way that Britney Spears was treated? And I think that kind of soul searching is really interesting right now.
Totally. I mean, I can't help but think about how her struggles became fodder for the machine, right? There was a lot of either kind of voyeuristic, oh, look at her shaving her head, oh, look at her bashing a paparazzo's car with an umbrella. But there was always, to me, an element of, it was just fodder for how a lot of women in the entertainment industry have been treated for a long time. And I really think there's a discussion here to be had about agency and gender. I mean, a lot of the social media comments I've seen after her testimony were, okay, there are many male stars who have had very public mental health problems, mm-hmm. public substance abuse struggles. You know, people said, how is this different from Kanye? How is this different from Robert Downey Jr.? How is this different from Charlie Sheen? Mm-hmm. They were never placed in conservatorships. You know, this is a woman who, as you said at the very top, she's released 4 albums. I think 2 of them went platinum. She was a judge on The X Factor. She did a 4-year Las Vegas residency that generated something like $138 million. Generally, conservatorships are reserved for people who cannot look after their own best interests day to day. And she, frankly, just does not fit that profile at all. And there's also this whole ecosystem of people who seem to have been profiting from this arrangement. And I'm not just talking even her immediate circle. They're sort of like galaxies of people at the law firms and security companies and things like that who seem to have profited very well for a very long time now. And I think that's part of people's fascination, too.
I was just curious, like, as somebody who wasn't in the game, right, in the media game during this all came out and who, I guess, is ostensibly in the media game now, I feel like we treat the, like, pop stars as consumption items a little bit differently now, right? And like, maybe that comes in key with, like, the poptimism swing, right? That, like, people like the Beyoncés and Taylor Swifts and Olivia Rodrigos of the world deserve to be taken seriously and critically as artists, which I don't think was a shake given to the Christina Aguilera's and Britney Spears's of the world, at least back in my day. You know what I mean? And I wonder if you guys think that's changed. Like, if a teen pop star today had, let's say, like, had an issue, had a mental issue, like, would we treat them the same way? Like, the cynical part of me still says, like, yeah, we probably would still eat them up.
I think there has been a massive shift. You mentioned the Poptimist revolution and kind of the way that pop stars began to be viewed differently, probably starting about 20 years ago, where I think a lot of writers, I can only speak from my own experience as a writer, like, I remember I used to think of Britney Spears as the machine, not as the product of the machine, not as somebody who was exploited by the machine, but as the machine herself, which is an incredibly unempathetic way to view what her life must have been like. But I think there was a process that took place somewhat with the rise of social media, somewhat with... There were a few pop songs that really kind of seemed to trigger a difference in the way a lot of critics thought about pop music. Interestingly, one of those pop songs was Toxic by Britney Spears, where all of a sudden people talked about pop music in a little bit different way. And I think that signaled a little bit of a shift in the way we think about pop stars, and where people started to think of pop stars more as people and people who were going through things instead of thinking of them as machines. And I think in a weird way, she kind of helped usher in a more empathetic and human view of what pop stars are going through that has made it a little bit more possible for pop stars to become hugely famous and be treated fairly and live happy lives.
Well, it's totally unclear, right, whether or not we see unvarnished truths on, like, a star's social media, right? Like, because that's all mediated too, right? Like, as much as it's the veneer of immediacy. I mean, maybe I'm cynic, but that's kind of how I think about it. Because these things are all managed too and planned and lots of, there's a machine there too. But she really is kind of in this interesting cusp place, right? Because as you said, like around the time of Toxic, it felt like there was a shift. And there are also stars who are her very near peers, like Beyonce, who have a totally different relationship to the public. I mean, they were born the same year and I can't help but think of them as almost belonging to two different eras in terms of how they relate to their public.
And I think there are also unique circumstances around every rise to pop stardom, right? Every person's ecosystem is different and every person's family is different. I interviewed Billie Eilish at ACL in 2019 and talked to her parents backstage. And it was just very clear that she had a very different kind of team around her than we're talking about when we talk about Britney Spears. And Britney Spears got dealt a really rough hand in so many ways, including the era in which she came up.
I mean, I'm dating myself here, but I've written about this, that I worked for her record label group around the same time she was coming up. And there was a super paternalistic culture there. And I don't mean just because she was a glittering young woman. I mean, like, even the boy bands who she was label mates with, you know, in a lot of cases had very unscrupulous management, or who turned out to be afterwards, and kind of being taken advantage of was part of the game. And that was terrible. But there was sort of a, in the industry, I think there was kind of a wink and a nod that that was just the way things were. And, you know, obviously, Britney Spears seems to have had very particular family challenges, too. But, like, I think she was very much a product of that culture and that time of place, that you couldn't necessarily rely on management to be looking after your best interests. And, you know, who's to say whether or not the label was looking after those people's best interests? But, yeah, to your point, like, it feels like a very unperfect storm of circumstances around Britney in particular. And it seems like she's almost trapped in amber, that those circumstances have held sway for a lot of her lifetime.
Well, thanks so much to both of you guys for being here. Obviously, there's a hearing today that's going to reveal more. I appreciate all the hard work you guys have done reporting this story as it's unfolded. So Anastasia and Andrew, thanks so much to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
And our beat on the crime and legal desk.
Well, thank you for your hard work. We will see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about the television series Blindspotting.
The economy is changing so fast right now, and sometimes it seems like there's something new to worry about every day. On The Indicator from Planet Money, we bring you human stories and easy-to-understand explanations to help you make sense of these crazy times, all in just 10 minutes a day. That's The Indicator from Planet Money.